Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Gather round the witch's bucket, for it's another night of the chilling podcast of Sabrina.
Again, I want to emphasize that it's called a cauldron.
What? No, it's a bucket.
No, a bucket is much smaller than a cauldron and usually not forged of the blackest iron.
But this is a little tin bucket, and we put our little eyes
is
on
this. Is this going to be every episode?
Yes.
What? Who is this?
This is my familiar, Pete.
But I thought I was your... Who's the familiar and who's the witch?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe I'm the familiar?
We're all too familiar.
I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And as mentioned, you're listening to the chilling podcast of Sabrina, a recap podcast for Netflix's Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. That's definitely not going to get confused in my head at any point.
No, chilling.
Cool.
We are going to be talking about the premiere episode of the show, which just dropped on Netflix, or if you're listening to this weeks later, who cares?
Yeah.
There you go.
That's how life is now.
We had a preview episode that went up. Just if you're curious, you can, hopefully at this point, subscribe in all sorts of podcast feeds, specifically to Chilling Podcast of Sabrina, or we also do a Riverdale podcast called Riverdale After Dark. We're going to be dropping some of these episodes there as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, subscribe everywhere. Tell your friends. Yeah. But we should jump into this. We should talk about this first episode the show.
Pilot.
Really, the only setup we need to do is this is from Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, who is the creator of Riverdale. He also wrote a comic, art by Robert Hack, that was published by Archie Comics. They only published 8 issues of the comic, so you can actually jump right in. It's awesome. We love the comic.
Great.
Fantastic.
Comic.
But other than that, we can jump right into it.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk generally first about what you guys thought about the episode? How'd you feel about the premiere? Pete, you were pretty freaked out going in.
You're generally scared of things.
Yeah. Well, that's a shitty thing to say.
Well, is it true, though?
No, I don't like horror movies. And yes, this has some gore in it, but it's kind of like a light gore. It's not like a intense, like it's every once in a while, like they do some scary stuff. It's not like a horror movie where you're like, oh, Jesus, the whole time.
But I feel like the thing that scares you more is maybe the creepiness. There's a general creepiness.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I would like to say the title sequence was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
A fun setup to kind of bring you into this world.
I love that. I love them using the art from the Archie's comics and not just the Robert Hack art. There's some Francesco Francavilla art in there, I think, as well.
Definitely.
And they use the classic Archie art as well for the based on the characters from Archie comics, which was super cute.
Love it.
Yeah, so that's very good. How'd you feel about the show, Justin?
I think this is great. It has such a different feel from Riverdale. It feels like an 80s movie, both in the soundtrack and the way it's shot. They do this thing where they sort of blur the edges of the screen on either side. Either that or I'm going blind.
No. Particularly when they get into witchy or spell stuff, they vignette the frame that it looks.
Notice that.
Yeah. Really?
I have poor eyesight. So.
Yeah, okay. I know. Glasses.
Yeah, Mr. Coke bottles over here.
Hey, fuck you guys.
No.
What are you talking about?
Like, I love Coke. Coke is one of the most popular drinks in the world.
I wish my eyesight was bad enough that I could look through Coke bottle bottoms.
By the way, for those of you listening to the podcast, we should specify Pete literally has Coke bottles for glasses.
Yeah, they're full. They're full of Coke. You can't see anything. No wonder. But if you're thirsty.
It's a great way to, you know, when you're thirsty, you just open the straw on the side and I can drink.
So smart. He really sees the world through Coke-colored glasses.
I don't know why you guys aren't getting on board.
No, it's really great.
It's a great way to live life.
Fill them up.
So the way the show is shot is gorgeous. It was actually the same crew as Riverdale, which is interesting. They gave it a very different look. One of the things we talk about on a Riverdale podcast a lot is that the show doesn't get enough credit for how well it's shot.
Yeah.
But this even totally different. The production design is so far beyond. Every frame is packed with so many details. The Spellman house is awesome, so cool. And beautiful, and I want to live there. It's crazy. The town, even the hallway in the high school.
Were you talking about the creepy house where she lives?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's very cool.
It's like they've built everything like a haunted house, and I love that.
And you want to live in a haunted house.
I just want to sleep there overnight for $1 million.
That's ridiculous.
No, I agree. It's I don't know if it's a budget thing, but Riverdale is so tight. You're focused on the characters, and there's so much happening that it's hard to do anything else. With this, it's much more expansive. You feel like you're in a world. You're in this creepy town. It's set in the modern day, but it feels like the past in a cool way.
Well, they set that up with the voiceover at the beginning of the episode where Sabrina says, "Welcome to Greendale, the town where it's always Halloween."
I mean, that's how Riverdale starts every episode, is with the voiceover. So this was kind of like a familiar way to start.
But unlike Riverdale, where Jughead's writing a shitty novel, she's just having a cool conversation.
Oh, it's cool when she does it, but not when Jughead?
Exactly.
That's fucked up, man.
Why? Well, I like that setup because, to your point, it gives it this timeless feel. It sets up a town that kind of exists outside the real world, whether that's through magic or otherwise, so that they can have things that feel modern, but they can also have things that feel like the 50s and the 60s, 70s, greatest hits of the 80s and the 90s and today.
And today.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's all over the place where it's like, it's in modern world. Nope, all the cars are old, and you know, like it's like the time period thing was a little swishy for me, where it was like I thought it was one time period, and then another shot it seemed more modern, and then it was kind of all over.
But again, I think that is part of the camp aesthetic that Agorascasa is building and has on Riverdale too, where it's like, it's kind of everything. It's whatever makes the most sense at any given moment, but I would argue that, at least based on this episode, Sabrina makes more sense than Riverdale.
Definitely.
What?
Almost anything makes more sense than Riverdale.
No, come on. There is a monster that turns into a cat. Like, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, let's jump into the episode, because I think what this episode does so nicely, and the reason I say it makes sense, is they spend a lot of time very fluidly setting up the rules of the world. And what I love right from the beginning is we are thrown into the middle of things. We're thrown into the middle. Sabrina is going to have her 16th birthday on a blood moon, on a Halloween. She is going to have to join the Church of Night.
Her dark baptism.
Right, but it's not about her finding out she's a witch and exploring these powers like a lot of pilots would do. Instead, she's already a witch. Magic already exists in the world. There's already creepy things going on in Greendale. There's no inciting event. If anything, we are heading towards that exciting event, and I think that's a really interesting place to start it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I agreed. Her voiceover at the top is like, "I'm a witch. This is crazy. I'm seeing a movie with my friends." And then you just,
Pete, you raised your hand. What's going on?
Well, you kind of just were like, "Yeah, this world makes sense," and I'm really having a hard time wrapping around my head around that. In this world, witches exist, and then like, but people act like witches don't exist in this world, and they act like they're not living in this weird, creepy town.
Yeah, that's the real world.
Sure, but also like
on MTV, the MTV Real World.
Okay, so Sabrina's a witch, and then like her favorite teacher all of a sudden puts her hair down and completely changes how she talks. I'm not going to think about that at all. Like, what the fuck?
What's the problem with changing your look?
No, that's fine, but if that's your favorite teacher, and then like
I understand you can't take off your glasses because all the coke would spill out, right, but sometimes people change what they look like.
Yeah. That's true, but just like, you're a witch, why aren't you suspicious of that?
You could have coke contact lenses. I don't know how to say that.
I thought you were going to say
cocktail.
I do.
You could have cocktail lenses. Like a martini glass feels like it's the right shape.
Sometimes I go one lens, rum, the other lens coke.
Rum and coke. Pete's wasted. He can't see out of his rum eye.
Oh my god, this has gotten so far out of control right from the very beginning. At the top of the show, as you mentioned, they're all seeing a movie. We very quickly meet a couple of different characters in Sabrina's life, or at least in her human life. We meet Roz. I think Roz is the name of the character.
Yep.
Who's one of her friends. She's the one wearing coke bottle glasses.
Yep.
We also meet
Susie. I relate to her.
Yeah.
Susie, another one of her friends, and we meet her boyfriend, Harvey Kinkle. Now, we speculated on the preview episode that Harvey Kinkle was going to out Archie on Riverdale.
Yes. Yeah,
I think proven.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
He's so sweet, so stupid.
I love him. I think he's very endearing.
Wait, you hate Archie, but you love this guy?
No, I don't hate Archie at all.
You guys, all you do is make fun of how dumb Archie is.
I love Archie. It's like how you like a very stupid pet.
Yes, but the thing is,
like a cat that eats its own shit.
The thing that's working for me almost immediately about Harvey Kinkle is he is completely devoted to Sabrina. He is a puppy dog.
Yeah,
he's not stupid so much as he's sweet and naive. And yeah. Ross Lynch, who's playing him, is channeling that perfectly.
I was surprised he wasn't a football player, like they did the All American. I don't think so, because in the episode the football players are sort of the bullies of the school, so it makes sense.
Which is
why,
normal, you know, that's a normal role for football players to be.
Yeah, they're so aggressive. Yeah.
Yes, so you're saying in the comic
he's like sort of the Letterman jacket classic.
I do wonder if they did that to separate him from Archie a little bit,
yeah,
to make him kind of a different character, because there is. Even though Netflix is going to have a different audience than the CW, there is going to be a crossover audience from Riverdale to Sabrina. So I imagine they wanted to make them as different as possible.
Yeah.
And then the other character that we meet is Miss Wardwell, played by Michelle Gomez. Now, if you ever watched Doctor Who, she was one of the villains of Doctor Who. She's also a Brooklyn resident. See her around every now and again.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
We should do a fun like witch thing with her.
Like we hunt her?
Yeah, we should hunt her.
What?
Hunt her. She reminded me of when I first saw her is, you ever seen the movie Willow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bav Morda, the
with
the witch villain of Willow.
Yeah.
She sort of has a similar look, I think.
Wow.
And she's introduced as kind of the
thing
nerdy.
To say about somebody.
What do you mean?
She's playing a witch.
She is so evil in that movie.
I know. It's great. I love Willow.
One thing I will mention, I went to the New York Comic Con panel for
Humble Brag over here.
Can buy a ticket to Comic-Con and go. This is not like a secret thing.
Mr. Big Deal.
Yeah, guys, I was at a big panel.
I had a press pass, but it's not a big deal.
It seems really like you're making a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I was backstage and hung out with the cast, and it's not a big deal.
Nice.
I didn't do that. But they did mention, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa again said about Michelle Gomez's audition, that it was one of the best auditions he's ever seen in his life, because she came in with her hair done up like Miss Wardwell. Ooh. And they were like, I don't know if you're right for this character. And then she took a pin out of her hair and shook it down, and it just turned into the character that she eventually becomes in the episode.
That whole hair-changing thing was a bit much. That was a lot.
Well, I think that's great, though. Like, I think that's sort of the arch... Again, very campy elements of the show that work very nicely.
Yeah. Should we get into it right there? Because that's we meet...
You guys keep saying, like, oh, yeah, the show makes complete sense, and then describe things that make no sense whatsoever.
It does make sense within the context of the show. So Miss Wardwell, she's this buttoned-up teacher who Sabrina's like, come, we hang out at this bookstore, which is like a chocolate shop, but different a little bit.
I love that place.
That place looks cool, yeah.
Oh, it's great. I'd love to hang out there. I don't know. We're, again, getting sidetracked, but Kick-Ass, in the movie Kick-Ass, they have that comic book shop that's also a diner/soda shop. Same sort of thing with Cerebus Books. I love it. I would love to hang out at a place like that.
A bookstore that serves coffee. Good luck finding that. So she's like, I have to go home. On her way home, she is listening to some CCR, just rocking out.
Bad Moon
Rising.
As, you know, button-up teachers do.
And she almost hits a girl in the street.
Who I thought was a zombie when I first saw her.
I think that was because they were seeing Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
I think that was the scam.
And also because I think maybe she was a zombie.
That either one could be true, guys.
In the comic, if I remember correctly, it's been a little while since I read it, but Madame Satan, who's the character, she's dead. She crawls out of a grave and has a very similar scene in the book.
Yeah.
So to your point, basically a zombie.
But that's, at that point, she's not a witch lady yet, right? She's just a normal teacher.
We don't know. Oh, her?
Yeah.
Yes.
Miss Wardwell. Yeah.
Miss Wardwell is just a normal teacher.
Okay.
But what happens is, to jump ahead a scene, the zombie/witch girl who crawled out of hell goes back to Miss Wardwell's house. They have a little bit of a conversation. The girl reveals she knows a lot about witches because she's a witch, puts on a spooky demon voice, telekinetically controls some scissors, stabs Miss Wardwell in the neck, and using a blood spell, transfers her essence over to Miss Wardwell to become Madam Satan, who seems at this point to be the villain of the series.
And then takes her hair down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she takes her hair down.
You're really hung up on that.
You guys, nothing about that sentence made sense. Like, oh, yeah, this is what happened.
Someone crawled out of a grave. I literally just walked you through it.
Right, I know, but you were just the fact that you're like, yeah, the show makes total sense. Everything that happens, I'm like, what the fuck?
Let me ask you, what show makes sense? Like a documentary of someone just like recording a podcast? Like, I get that show.
I get that show.
So this is.
But you guys are just so familiar with this world where every step I'm like, what? What? And then they do the scene where Sabrina walks into her house, which is an insane house. Then there's a whole family living in her kitchen, which we're like, wait, what? Who are these people? Okay. What is going on?
At this point, I want to take a little side trip. Have you ever lived in a house with a family?
Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes they're in the same room, but they don't all live there. Like, they don't all sleep and live in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I think I know what the problem is. So Pete, you, Pete, are living your life linearly. Everything that happens to you happens to you and you're experiencing it. But is it confusing to you when you don't see me and Justin and then we show up later and you're like, what the fuck is this? This makes no sense.
Yeah.
No.
What I'll explain is that we're also living our lives literally and things happen to us when you're not there.
Oh, it's funny you say that because I'm actually just a character. When Pete leaves, I shut down.
No, but what I'm saying is... I wasn't ready for that because I thought, okay, here's this blonde lady... She must have a family in her house, but when she walks into her house, it's a bunch of aunts, some other dude. like, I'm like, who? You know what I mean? Like, it does. I wasn't ready for, okay, and then revealed her parents were dead and stuff like that. But, like,
here's what I like. What I like is we've done a bunch of TV podcasts at this point, and on every different TV podcast, you have a different insane problem
yeah,
with the show.
Exactly.
Like a very specific insane problem that completely hooks you up and stops you from understanding or getting into the show.
And let me be honest, this is maybe the weirdest one. Yeah. You're like, what's this family?
I can appreciate the fact that it's a family, but you guys keep saying the word normal, but nothing about this show is normal.
Well, that's
like when I think, okay, she's a normal kid living in a haunted house. Okay, fine. No, it turns out that's not true.
We're not saying normal. We're saying the rules of the show are set up over the course of the pilot episode, which is the thing that first episodes of a TV show do. Yeah. And in the rules of the world, everything seems to follow.
Yeah.
If you apply it to the real world, does it make sense? No, because magic doesn't exist. But this is a television show. Also, I should mention, because I feel like this is going to be a problem any second now, when... they're on one scene, and then that scene stops, and then they're in a different place. That's how film works.
Yeah, I know all this, asshole. I'm just saying, you started this premise by being like, yeah, it's a normal setup of a thing, and I just, like, I'm having a hard time. You guys are more familiar with who Sabrina is, how she interacts with this world that she lives in. Me coming from the outside, none of this shit makes sense, and it's a lot to process. Like, okay, this girl knows fucking magic, is lying to her boyfriend, her parents are dead, she's a half-breed, she, like, doesn't have to tell her friends about her secret life. Like, there's a lot to... It's a lot to process in a first episode.
Can I just mention that we're 18 minutes into this podcast? We talked about two scenes.
And Pete's like, whoa, what are we doing here?
Why don't we start walking through the plot a little bit?
Let's
accept the fact that you think the show makes no sense. That's fine. I get that perspective and just kind of move on and talk about it. Does that sound all right?
Sure. That's great.
Okay. And I remember on this show, like, cars run on gasoline. What else do we cover for Pete?
People drink water sometimes. Yeah. Oh, there's a breakfast scene. That's one of the three meals
and
that people
usually
eat
the first one a lot of
Fuck
times.
Fuck you, guys.
So let's get into it. After Madam Satan takes over the teacher's body, we cut
and lets her hair down.
That's her hair down, which really blew everyone's mind, obviously. Sabrina wakes up scared. and a bat flies in her window.
Right. Yeah. Which, oh, well, we should take a step back and talk about Harvey walking Sabrina home, because that's a super cute scene.
Very cute.
And again, in terms of efficiency, I think what this does very nicely is it sets up the Harvey-Sabrina relationship. Mm-hmm. They go into the house, and she immediately magics on the radio and dances to it. Yeah. Again, very cute, very like campy dance, 1950s, happy, 1960s type thing. But it's such a nice, efficient way of setting up that Sabrina is a witch, and she has powers even beyond her voiceover, which I think is great.
And then she's in conflict with her world of Harvey and being in high school. And
yeah, exactly. And real quick, we talked about Harvey. How do you feel about Sabrina at this point?
Great. I mean, I was a huge fan of Mad Men, mm-hmm. and to see her, Kiernan Shipka, I think is her name. At first, I was like, oh, she's just like Sally Draper. And then pretty quickly, I was like, oh, no, this is feels very different. And I think she does a great job.
Yeah, I'm a little 50-50 on her in this episode, I think. Like, there's stuff that I really like, but she seems like she is out of the Sabrina comics. Like, not even Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but she's kind of the earnest G. Willikers Sabrina, mm-hmm. which doesn't match what some of the rest of the cast is doing.
Right.
I think. Sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't. Generally, I'm enjoying her, but there are definitely other people on the cast I'm enjoying more in this first episode.
Yeah, I agree, because there's something about her that's like very naive, but then also so smart and complex with what's happening in her world. So it's like, it seems to not gel sometimes. I feel like some scenes were getting kind of almost a different character.
Yeah. But in general, like, much more on the side of positive. But she needs to be the person that is the center of this, that everything's revolving around. And I don't feel like I'm quite there yet with this episode.
And I do think it is a slightly different take. Sabrina from the most recent comic and the comics in general has a little bit more of a sort of mischief in her eye kind of a thing going on. And Kiernan Shipka doesn't have that. And she's mm-hmm. definitely more of the Harvey-style naive.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. I think that works. You miss the sparkle, though.
I think
after the movie, I think that's where I thought she was going to be the whole episode, where she's into gore, she's into this stuff, and she really has, like, a passion for all the specifics of her kind of, like, world and the
well, another thing that's interesting is the comic is fucking dark. Like, it is steeped down into darkness and gore and blood and upsetting imagery. And this, across the board with the characters, seems to have whittled off the edges. Like, they're still talking about death, they're still talking about killing people, but it's kind of in a cheekier, more fun way. Yeah. And I think that makes sense for a TV show, because you want to spend time with these people, and if they're just remorseless murderers, that's not going to suck you into the show.
That's true.
All right.
Although,
so that bat flies in the window.
Yep.
Dead parents. Is she Batman?
I'd say yes.
Also, like,
she takes the bat as her symbol of vengeance, right, Pete?
Right, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, she kills the bat.
And when you saw the bat flying, where you're like, oh, man, that hair going down was crazy, but I get this bat shit.
No, I was like, why isn't everybody worried about this bat turning into a vampire? I kept waiting for it to, like, turn into a vampire. I was like, if riches are real, then vampires are real. Why doesn't nobody think that that's going to happen?
Man, your brain works weird.
You guys didn't. You just thought, oh, bat.
No, at no point did I think it was a vampire.
Yeah.
You guys did take exception to her slamming down the book and then the date coming up. What was that about? You have a problem with them establishing what the date is on screen?
Well, I was laughing because it says October 28th of this year.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like, what year?
Yeah.
That's not how calendars work.
That's the point. Is it supposed to be whatever year you're watching this?
What if I'm watching this 3 years from now?
Well, it's like...
For the first time.
It's like, that's the point. Is it's supposed to be timeless. It's supposed to feel timeless. That's why they're saying that. It's like the first X-Men movie when they say, in the near future.
Oh, that's so smart.
I was just
And there's
still...
nothing about that movie that feels it all day.
Nope.
I was just more reacting to the fact it took forever to kill that bat. I was worried it was going to turn into a vampire.
Can I just mention my favorite scene in the original X-Men is when they're all downloading stuff on Napster? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and once again, timeless. In the near future, we're going to go back to Napster.
I think so.
So we after we find out the year, or not really technically, I guess, we meet this family that drove Pete crazy. We have Zelda and Wilda, the witches, and Ambrose.
Hilda.
Or Hilda, yeah.
Yeah.
And
so Zelda is played by Miranda Otto. She is delightfully arch and dismissive.
She's Eowyn from The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was also played Nina Locke in the Lock and Key pilot.
Oh, shot many years ago. Wait. The first one, the original one, which is awesome.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. She's great. Lucy Davis plays Hilda.
Also
delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. From the British office.
I love the ants.
So another interesting little detail from this Comic-Con panel. Chance Perdomo. Oh, shut up. I was in a place and I learned some things and I'm sharing it on the podcast.
You go to important things. You do stuff.
I don't want to get into it.
What time is your limousine?
Jesus Christ.
Take off the white gloves and shake our hands.
This is how I'm comfortable. This is who I am.
Okay. All right, big time.
This is how Pete wears Coke bottles for glasses. I dress in a tux for our podcast. I don't see why there's a big deal.
Can I have some of your caviar?
Chance Perdomo, who plays Ambrose on the show, again, giving a very, more nuanced, less asshole, horrible person vibe than in the comic.
Yep.
But the interesting detail was he originally auditioned to play Jughead on Riverdale.
Whoa.
And they loved him so much, they were like, oh, you're not quite right for Jughead, but when they were casting for Ambrose, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa tweaked the character from the comics so that they could get Chance Perdomo on the show.
That's fantastic. That's
awesome. Yeah.
He's fantastic.
He reminds me of the movie Serenity, Chiwetel Ejiofor, the character he plays, very much. Sort of in the same accent.
Yeah, his delivery
accent.
Is very similar.
Yeah, and this same vibe, sort of a very confident person who believes in their shit.
I didn't see what you're talking about.
Serenity?
Yeah.
You've never seen Serenity?
No.
Firefly?
Really?
Nah.
Oh, man.
What?
Great. Even if you didn't watch Firefly, great movie.
Yeah, it's very good. What I like about his performance as Ambrose is I feel almost beyond anybody else, he is perfectly nailing the tone of the show, that he has that darkness, he has that edge, he has that spark that you were talking about with Sabrina is kind of missing sometimes, where he's enjoying himself, but at the same time, he still has a very classic, simple, very earnest feel. Like, be underneath the darkness that he's portraying, there is clearly a caring and niceness going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting character. He is Sabrina's cousin. He is trapped in the house for some reason. We don't know why. 75 years he's been there. Pete died. Sorry. We'll bring him back in a couple of minutes.
Pete's been cursed.
We should also establish they work at the Spellman Mortuary all together. Zelda.
Super creepy reveal. By the way,
Zelda and Hilda run the mortuary.
They
Ambrose,
drink people's blood, apparently. That's cool.
That's
normal.
You were asking about vampires. Mm-hmm. They drink people's blood. That's what vampires
do. They use it
do.
For spells. It's like, it's just
like olive oil. To
yeah,
them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah sure. Ooh, do you think instead of Batman, she's going to become Spellman?
Oh, that's a fun idea. What a great name.
Yeah. If only that worked out somehow.
Spell Woman.
Ooh, dog. Let's move on.
So then we meet Ambrose in the cemetery. Sabrina buries the bat.
As you do.
The family cemetery, I guess.
Right.
Because there's a
the
lot of
pet
graves.
Cemetery. A little nod to Stephen King there.
I don't think that's what that was. But right. Then Sabrina has to find her familiar ahead of her dark baptism. So she goes in the woods, rings a bell, and waits.
Super creepy. Just don't invite whatever creature from the woods.
Also, I really like the exchange that led up to that. So for a dark baptism, everybody has to choose a familiar. And Zelda has a thing where she's talking about there's a cute little hedgehog. And they have this whole book of cards showing off the familiars. I like the detail that the witches in this show are almost an institutionalized thing. Like, it's not this weird, wild magic. They've figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
And that plays through with the interaction with Hilda and Zelda and Sabrina as well, where everything in this world, in this dark world, is treated and talked about very normally.
Yeah, they're steeped in it. They're living it.
Yeah, exactly.
What would you guys
have? A little
have
too casual for me.
Too casual.
Oh, yeah. What would your familiar be?
Yeah, what would your familiar be?
Probably, I'd say a tiny pig. I would love
a tiny pig.
Not a long pig?
No, not a long pig. Pete found out what long pig was this episode.
And I was really upset that both of you knew what it was.
Yeah, no, I go to there's a great long pig restaurant I know about.
That means you eat human.
No, is it?
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll go in there and the person I'm with ends up going missing.
Oh, man, you're bringing people for them to murder them.
Yeah, they pay me in great long pick. What do you think your familiar would be?
That's tough. It might be a puma.
I was just thinking puma.
Yeah. Puma or a turtle.
Wait, be easy to carry around the turtle.
Yeah, I think so. Having a puma in your house would probably not be great.
Oh, that would be
you
the
live
best.
In a small apartment for yeah. that.
Plenty of room for a puma.
Really?
Dude, if you're going to be friends with a puma, you got to be close friends. That's how it works. You can't try to keep a puma at a distance. You got to be tight with the puma.
Yeah, there's a motivational poster if I've ever heard one.
Got to be tight with your puma.
Yeah.
Hang in there, and it's a what puma living with you. An ankylosaurus, obviously, would be cool, just like a turtle dinosaur.
Right.
Or something small, mosquito.
What? Oh, that's the worst.
And then you get they get the blood for you.
Oh, that's so gross. It'd take them all day just to get a little blood for you to be able to use.
Here you go.
It's just so annoying.
Hey, mosquito, fill this cup with blood. Yeah.
We could probably jump ahead and talk about the other Salem scene, though. So later on, Sabrina does find some claw marks on her window. She ignores, which is cool.
No,
she doesn't. She says, oh, what now? That's the opposite of ignoring it.
Yeah.
And then there's a goblin in the back behind her changing, what do you call those?
Barrier?
Yeah, changing.
I thought it was a closet door.
I think it was a closet door.
Oh, all right, whichever. I call that a changing barrier. Yeah. And this is the only time we get to hear Salem talk. The goblin turns into Salem, very cute black cat.
Yep.
Love the character, but
which
unlike
she's
Sabrina the teenage.
She ignores that. She ignores the fact that this demon turns into a cat.
But
and
that's
she's
again, that's
she doesn't ignore
her.
It. She is watching it happening. That is the opposite of ignoring it. She is scared of the goblin, and then the goblin turns into the cat, and she says,
she's like, oh, well, that'll be my familiar, because that doesn't seem dangerous at all, and totally normal in this witch world that I live in.
It is normal.
That is exactly correct.
Cool.
Oh, my God.
If you were to show someone who had never seen the television before, they'd be like, pizza witch, pizza witch, but you're, like, normally watching it like we just watched Sabrina.
What?
Think about it. So she has Salem, and we were saying he doesn't talk in the way that the cat on Sabrina the Teenage Witch talked.
Right,
which is great.
Really?
So I think having that cat talk would be annoying.
I don't know. I feel like they could make it. Well, if anything, I feel like
it would take
Ambrose,
a very campy turn. Like they would have to turn up the camp if that was like.
Ambrose is the Salem of this show.
Yeah, the sassy
bitch.
Yeah.
What did you just do?
So
the look in your face right now after
sparkle in your
eyes is just like it's too much to handle.
While Sabrina's waiting for her familiar to show up, three witches find her in the woods, and they are mean girls.
Yes, they're the Cheryl of the show.
Yeah,
though not quite as fun. They're a little more serious.
I don't know.
It's Prudence, Dorcas, and somebody else. That's all I remember. But Prudence is the lead of the Mean Girls. They go to the School for the Unseen Eye, I think it was called, something like that.
Unseen Arts.
Unseen Arts, which is what Sabrina is supposed to go to after she has her dark baptism. She's supposed to go to this Hogwarts for witches and never be seen by the human world again.
Yeah.
So these three characters, the Weird Sisters, approach her and curse her, which doesn't seem to do much.
It gives her a bloody lip.
Right.
And later we find out that maybe she has to light some candles and stuff.
Right.
But we don't really know what it does.
But again, I know we keep hitting on this point, but I like the fact that it's kind of just part of this world that she gets cursed and she's like, I got cursed.
And immediately she stood there and when she was just like letting them like circle her and be
what
like,
what are you going to do?
Run away so you don't get cursed.
Can't run away from a curse.
This witch world, cursing somebody again is part of the tapestry. That it's not like this is the end of everything. It's just this is an annoying thing that
happens. You get cursed six times on your way to work.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So she runs into school, immediately washes herself off, and comes on Susie, who has been beaten up. Now, we should mention that Susie is played by a non-binary actor. In the span of the show, I don't think they've exactly established it, but I believe Susie is trans. Mm.
They don't mention it, but it feels like we're headed that way.
Right. So getting beat up by the football players, Sabrina gets incensed about that, goes to talk to the principal, who is
Balky.
Balky Bartokomous playing the same character from Perfect Strangers.
It's crazy that they were able to pull that off.
Really,
how'd they get the rights?
That we had such an amazing character, then had to play this awful person, which
the
was
the amazing
really
character you're talking about is Balky.
Balky, yeah. Seeing Balky be the bad guy was fucking heartbreaking. Not only just the bad guy, but this person who is not listening to this person.
I think it's fucked up in Perfect Strangers they didn't get an actual Meepos resident to play that character.
Yeah. No, it's rude. I think today you wouldn't be able to do that. Back in the 80s, like, things were a little freewheeling.
Exactly. Yeah. You can just do a funny accent.
But it is cool how incensed Sabrina gets about this.
Well, here's another thing. Did you know on Family Matters they weren't an actual family?
What, Pete?
Yeah.
That must have blown your mind.
Anyways,
should have been called.
It was cool that in this world of like witchery and stuff, they are making some nice political comments and talking about how it's important to stand up to bullying and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so they go to the principal. The principal immediately is like, "Nope, Susie should go to another school." Yeah, and they're like, "We're not going to have this." So to follow that plot line, because it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Sabrina gets upset. She tries to figure out what to do. Miss Wardwell, who's now Madam Satan, tells her that the Principal Balky, is scared of spiders. And she goes back with Ambrose. They use Hilda's familiars, who are spiders, to curse the principal. He gets covered in spiders.
Too overkill.
So many spiders.
One spider would have
Now,
been
let me ask you a question. Do you think he's going to turn out to be Spider-Man?
Oh, that's a great point.
I was just worried he was going to jump out the window, you know, in fear of all the spiders all over the place.
Well, it's interesting, though. So we've already established that Sabrina is going to turn out to be Batman, and we've established that Principal Balky is going to turn out to be Spider-Man. Do you think we're headed towards, like, an epic crossover type thing here?
Yeah. The Amalgam Universe.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. So he gets covered in spiders, takes the day off of school, so they push
through. He takes a day. He takes a personal day. It's understandable.
Yeah. If I was covered in spiders, I'd take a day.
Hey, I'm covered in spiders. I'm going to be late. I need to take a day.
I'm sorry, Principal. You're out of personal days this year, so you can't. Yeah.
No more spider days. All right. You're covered in spiders again? Come on, dude. Get your life together.
It's the third time that's happened to you.
I'm going to use that excuse at work. I think. Yeah. Sorry, can't come in. Covered in spiders. So that gives them enough chance to push through their club, which they call Wicca, women in something, something, something. Doesn't matter.
Culture.
Yeah, sure. Why not? So whatever it was.
Which is great, though. I'm glad that she was like, before I leave, I have to protect women. I thought that was a really awesome thing.
Yeah, it's great. And
I almost have a feeling she might not leave.
What? Whoa. All right, so that's that plot line done.
Yep.
Shall we jump back?
Yeah, let's jump back.
To her mind wiping her boyfriend. Can we talk about that?
So, yes. So, Harvey, they're on a lovely walk, and she comes clean to say that she is leaving the school.
Because he's like, he's straight up calling her out on the fact that, like, you can't say to your friends, like, hey, I'm going to do this thing that I can't talk about, and it is just, you know, super secret.
For her sweet 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, he wants to hang out with her on her sweet 16. She's like, I have to do this thing with my aunts. And then she says, I'm going to go to a school in Connecticut. Obviously, Connecticut's the worst state. She can't name the school.
Just randomly throwing Connecticut underneath the bus right now?
The Nutmeg State? Yeah, that state. That state's no good.
Really?
Yeah, if you can
taking a hard stance like Connecticut.
I don't know about that. That Charter Oak and shove it right up your ass.
Really?
I love it.
Connecticut, if anything, to me is like, it's just there.
Yeah, exactly.
As a state.
Yeah, they're ruining all the other states around.
Wow.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
Come on, guys. The UConn Huskies? Come on.
Oh, the worst.
It's like the non-frosted mini wheats of states.
No, there are way more boring states. Connecticut's actively bad.
Really?
Yeah, you've driven through it.
It's fine.
No. Not
Wait,
even
what
close.
State is worse?
What state is worse?
Yeah, what state's worse than Connecticut?
I'm saying no state is worse than Connecticut.
Oh my God.
There are plenty more boring states. Delaware. What?
Delaware has a water gap, right?
Yeah.
That's not a feature.
That's pretty sweet.
Also, the Delaware water gap isn't really even in Delaware. It's between New York and New Jersey.
The Delaware River Valley is nice.
That's the Delaware River. Yeah, that's also not Delaware is where that ends. The Delaware River is a lovely place.
I'm sorry.
Place. Yeah.
Delaware is part of one of the best state-based jokes in the world.
What?
What a Delaware. Her New Jersey.
That's not a joke.
Also, I like when people
Alex
say
is the
Delaware.
Connecticut of this podcast.
Oh, man. Anyway,
that means I'm just fine.
Cool. Take that compliment. to the bank. So she can't name the school. She eventually takes Harvey to the place where she was born in the woods.
Right.
And comes clean.
She comes clean.
Tells him everything.
And give him a chance to actually process it and just panics and mind wipes him.
Well, so she's like, oh, you know how there's bat mitzvahs and quinceañeras? I do that, but for witch.
Yeah.
I'm a witch. Like,
I like that scene a lot.
Me too.
I know that
now,
seems to
I
throw
haven't
you
been
guys
to
a
bar mitzvah. Is it similar to the witchcraft?
At 13, I got bar mitzvah. We called it my dark baptism.
Do you now hail Satan? Is that now your deal?
No, I always hailed Satan.
Oh, that's okay, a great point.
Yeah. Haven't you heard about Jews eating Christian babies? We call it long pig. Just bringing it all together.
Oh, man, great. That's so gross.
Yes, but I like the scene. I thought the way this was treated was very good because it does underline, it sets up right away. It doesn't build up like, ooh, Sabrina's holding this secret for the whole series.
Right.
She immediately blurts it out and it doesn't work. So she uses
also,
witchcraft to reverse
it. Says how much she loves Harvey.
Yeah.
How much she cares about him, that he's like, don't lie to me. And she's like, you're right. I shouldn't lie to you.
Yeah.
And she comes clean. But I just wish if she would have given him a couple of minutes to really process it, he might have been all right with it.
Well, I think you're right. And I do think if I know anything about TV shows, this is probably going to come back to bite her at some point.
Yeah.
Generally, when you do these sort of mind wipe spells, those things start to creep out during moments of stress. And he remembers that Sabrina mind wiped him, that's going to be pretty bad for her.
Yeah. He's going to be probably a little bit mad about that.
Yeah.
Once I figure out you guys mind wiped me, I'm going to be really pissed.
You'll never figure it out.
All
right.
Well,
we mind,
mind wipe.
Oh, I like how Pete fell asleep.
Are we talking about something?
Yeah.
Why are we in the woods? How did we get here?
You were born here.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
You were born here.
You were born here.
I was
here.
Born similar to Wolverine.
What? So,
was born in the woods.
So she fixes Harvey's brain, leaves, and is feeling sad because she doesn't know what to do still.
Right.
Goes home, finds out that she has a blood curse on her from the Weird Sisters.
Right, got a cracking egg.
Got a cracking egg. Hilda's like, hey, take a bath. And she does and has a horrifying vision.
Which you guys were very chill about. Like you acted like every time you took a bath, you have this insane dream.
Well, your problem was her falling asleep in the bath.
In the water. You can't.
Right.
If you fall asleep underwater, it means you're going
to
drown and
die.
To
be clear, this is recapping that something happened while we were watching the episode. But Sabrina falls asleep in the bath, has a vision
underwater.
Has a vision of the woods where her parents are there. She's running around to the woods naked, screaming and chasing after them, finds two babies there, one of them with cloven hooves, and wakes up. Pete's problem was that she fell asleep in the bath.
Well, under the water, like she could have drowned.
That's sure.
I would also think that there's a lot of other things that are stressing her out besides the water.
Right. Huh. Like the other baby with the cloven hooves.
Yeah, now, remember the baby with the goat
legs?
Do you
think she's one of the babies, and then that was like her brother or something?
Well, that's what I think is super interesting. That's what I think they're definitely teasing here, is that Sabrina is not the only baby that her children have. That's what I took away from
that. That her parents had, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a,
yes, parents, not children.
Yeah, children.
I said that weird.
Children don't have babies.
Not usually. I mean, eventually, sometimes they do.
Oh, like, that's true. Babies having babies. Yeah, I feel like we're going to meet a little goat brother or sister.
Or
goat
maybe man. That was the dude in the tree.
So let's keep going. she's wavering. She talks to her family about how she doesn't know if she wants to write her name.
Which was a big mistake. Then
can I actually mention something like real world, just talking about the bar mitzvah thing? Watching this episode reminded me that I think a week before my bar mitzvah, I did the same thing that Sabrina did. So that actually felt very true to me. I suddenly decided, I was like, this is too much. I don't know why I'm getting bar mitzvahed. I don't know why I'm doing this. I feel like you want me to do this, and I need some sort of explanation of what I'm doing, what this ritual means.
Oh, wow.
So I imagine that, I wasn't the only person that went through that, and B, that is a real thing that they were channeling for that writing. So that actually felt very true to me, that like particularly when you have a big event coming up, there's a sense of this pressure on you to deliver that you don't want to take that extra step. That are you doing it for somebody else, or are you actually doing it for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, when she confronts her family, they were like, "You're this is what your parents wanted," you know, and they're pushing their kind of religious beliefs on her, and she's like, "I don't know, like you're asking me to leave everything I know and like."
Yeah,
yeah, and I've never been through a rite of passage like that, so I'm technically still a boy.
Ooh, that we makes should a bar mitzvah you on this podcast.
Oh, that would be fun.
Great. Stay tuned next episode when Justin will be studying his Haf Torah.
Ha what's that? So Ambrose, to help her make this choice, Ambrose recommends that she goes to an orchard and gets called the Melomalus, I believe. Goes to the oldest tree.
Melomalus?
Melomalus.
Sounded delicious, whatever it was.
Yeah. They throw the word delicious around a lot in this show. delicious is how they talk about everything.
Yeah, I love that. Like, that's very The Veach, or whatever that movie is called, The Witch.
I think it's just Witch.
It's The Witch, but the W is spelled with two uppercase Vs.
I think that's just a cool gimmick.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to say.
I'm going to call it The
Veach.
The Veach. Doesn't the goat say, "Dost thou want to live deliciously?" So that feels like a very satanic thing to me. And
delicious.
It's such a weird word.
Delicious.
I like it.
What's wrong?
I like
stop it. Saying that.
Delicious. Pete, you look delicious. Ambrose says, go to the oldest tree in the orchard, take a bite from the apple, and you will learn. You'll take all the knowledge from that
or
apple.
Or it'll be like this horrible thing if there's a worm in it.
Yeah, don't get a worm in it. That's good advice for any apple eater.
Yeah. So then we go to the most ridiculous orchard in the world.
All right.
Some other stuff happens in between. We'll just cover it quickly. They're at school, which has a fireplace. I feel like Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa doesn't know what schools are.
Because sure.
They're like
these. It's the same thing
with
the common room in Riverdale High, where it's just like, what?
Yeah. We hear some Donovan, which is Hurdy-Gurdy Man, the same song that's in the movie Zodiac, which I thought was cool because I like that movie. Ambrose is checking out a body, find a witch's mark.
Yes.
Which makes him think that there's a witch hunter hunting witches that are part of a coven, which I think is something that we're going to learn later.
That body is a straight up trap because the way it just showed up perfectly before her big thing was just.
Ooh, is that what you think?
Yeah.
Well, you think it's a trap?
It's a trap, yeah.
I think they're just setting up a bunch of plots that are going to play out over the course of the episode. That's kind of my guess at this point, but maybe you're right.
Yeah. You could be right, but I bet Alex is right. There's a witch hunter loose potentially in the future. And then we're back on the apple picking scene. Harvey.
So
and
cool.
Just to set this up. Just to set this up, I should mention Pete and Justin are orchard experts. And while we were watching this episode, proceeded to criticize the height of the trees and the way they
that's
worked.
Not, we're from apple country.
Yeah.
Okay. Motherfucker.
From upstate New York. My family. Like friends of my family had an orchard. Like we would go there all the time.
We know apple trees, bro.
Yeah,
and let me just say, those trees in this show were blossoming and had apples on them. I don't think that makes sense. They blossom. That's where the apples come from.
Not one of them was ever an apple tree. It was like ridiculous.
Yeah, the final tree at the end of the hay maze wasn't an apple tree. There were green and red apples on the same tree.
It looked like it was like a straight up different area of the country. It was like they went through a maze and then it was like in a swampland. Like that tree would never be near an apple.
I don't know what poor PAs had to tie all those apples to those trees.
Oh, yeah, that was rough.
That was clearly.
It was almost goofy.
I liked it because I think it tied into the whole production design of the show. It was a beautiful looking path that they were walking along. Clearly, the hay maze was enchanted. The center of it was weird and enchanted as well. It's all part of this magical world.
And let me just say also, though, hay maze isn't. Corn maze is a thing. You don't have a hay maze. It's too much hay.
That's way too much work as well. Because
why would you bail out of hay and stack all the hay?
Yeah, that's a waste of hay.
By the way,
this is our world. You talked about the bar mitzvah stuff. Yeah. That's your childhood. I went through a hay maze and I became a man on the other side.
Exactly, dude. When you go through a corn maze and survive it in upstate New York, that's a real.
I don't know if this is the place to talk about this or not. And this is like a little bit of a side to this, but I've been to that orchard you guys own, and it sucks.
Wow.
It is too factual. That's my problem.
Like, too much like
too
a real
realistic.
Orchard. Yeah, okay.
You like fake
shit. Yeah, I went there and I was like, I want some magic. I want a hay maze that stretches on forever with scarecrows that try to kill me. And you're like, here's a fucking real apple.
So Sabrina's evil goblin cat destroys the scarecrow and she asks the cat for help and then ignores the cat. She's like, should I pick this apple? And the cat goes, no. not that one. And she picks it anyway, doesn't even check it for worms, and takes a bite. Oh, it's got fucking maggots in it.
This is where it would really help if Salem was more of a sassy bitch and was like, don't pick that apple, Sabrina.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing we want in this show.
No, but it was clear. She asked the cat for help, and the cat was like, no.
Yeah, that's so one tree you don't want the knowledge from.
Very accurate. So she's going through the hay maze, which is where the apple tree she needs to get to is on the other side. A scarecrow attacks her that is being puppeted by Madame Satan.
Yeah.
Salem saves her ass.
Hair still down.
Again. I like that. That was really actually scary at points, which I think is great. The effects are very good.
I really liked when they cut to Madame Satan and seeing her puppet, I thought was really well done. Yeah. It was cool.
And it's also an interesting motivation she has. Madame Satan isn't trying to kill her when she's doing that. What she's trying to do is stop her from getting whatever knowledge she's getting. Yeah. So there's clearly some sort of secret in Sabrina's background that both Madame Satan and actual Satan don't want her to have. And we don't know what that is yet.
Yeah. Excited to find out what that is. Well, we do get her vision when she does bite the apple. She drops it. It immediately has
the Goblin King comes out of the tree.
A goat man comes out of the tree.
A Minotaur goat man with like
antlers. I think that's Satan.
That's what a goat man.
I believe that's Satan. Yeah. I mean,
oh, really? You think that's Satan?
Well, that's Satan. The way that he's depicted in the comic, that's Satan. Yeah. And Satan also traditionally in mythology has that goat head, has the cloven hooves.
Really?
So I think that's literally Satan coming out of the tree. We also get to see witches hanging from the tree. This is something in the history of Greendale that we learned over the course of the episode.
13 witches.
Yeah, that witches were hung back in the 1600s, but they kept the witch trials, they kept everything secret because they still wanted to practice and seem to have essentially taken over everything in the town.
Yeah.
So what we're getting a tease from there, I think I'm not quite sure what the Satan popping out of the tree is about, but I do think we're going to delve more into what happened back into the 1600s and how that ties into both Sabrina's parents and what's happening today.
From a character perspective, I think it's also playing on her anxieties about becoming a witch, which she's about to go through a dark baptism. The hung witches, like, why do I do this? All these people died, and then that Satan comes out of the tree and is coming for her, and it feels like this date is bearing down on her, and she has to make a choice.
And she luckily didn't swallow. She spit out the apple and
smart.
That's why
you always have to, before you swallow a piece of apple, wait until you find out so you're sure it's not a malamalice.
Right. I do that all the time. I mean, you guys lived in orchards, so
exactly.
you know about the malamalice.
I was born in the boughs of a red delicious tree.
These apples are delicious. As a matter of fact, they are, she said.
Cool, dude. Bare naked ladies. Pete was just quoting.
That looks like a red, disgusting apple to me, Sabrina.
Oh, my God.
Okay, cool. I like we're establishing our characters.
This is
going
to be something that's going to be fun every episode.
Now, Sabrina comes back to the house, and she announced that she made a decision. What do you think her decision was off of that
vision? I
think
she was going to do it. She was like, all right, I'll be a witch. But then I think meeting Mr. Couple levels below Satan.
One level below Satan.
I don't want to take away his power.
So we meet...
let me answer the question, too. I think she was going to say she wasn't going to sign the book. And she comes in, and there's Faustus Blackwood.
Right, yeah. So Faustus Blackwood, he is the emissary of Satan on Earth. He is the head of the Church of Night.
She was happy when she came in. She was like, guys, I have news. Like, she has good news. I'm going to be a witch.
No, but she just had a scary vision.
She's
going to
be like, no.
She just had a horrifying vision. I think she.
But she knew she had to battle this guy, and that the only way to be powerful enough was to sign up.
I don't think so. I think she is. I made a choice.
She's learning about the evils of the world, and she wants to battle it.
All right. Well, we'll definitely find out more about that next episode. But we do meet Faustus Blackwood. Sabrina's aunt seemed terrified of him as he's there.
It felt like they were being held hostage in that room.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where we leave off, is where Faustus Blackwood is going to try to convince her to join the Church of Night. So regardless of whatever decision she's come from, clearly there's a little crink in those plants right now.
And also her crink. It's like familiar, who is this evil goblin, wouldn't come in the house. That's how badass this one level below Satan dude is.
Great ending to the episode. For the end of our episode, I don't remember exactly how we phrased this. So we're going to do Which Witch Reigns Supreme?
Yeah.
Okay, over the course of the episode, Which Witch Reigns Supreme? Pete, who do you think was the MVP?
It's your neighbor there, the lady you see all the time in Brooklyn.
Madame Satan.
Madame Satan?
Yeah.
Yeah, why?
just because she, her hair's down and she's not taking it anymore.
All right.
I liked her when she was controlling the scarecrow. That was pretty badass.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I'm going to say Ambrose. I love Ambrose even early going. He, like I said, I think he hits the perfect tone for the show. There's a lot that I really enjoyed about this episode, but he embodies everything I want this show to be, and I'm very excited to watch him going forward.
I liked really liked Hilda and Zelda. I feel like they really set the table for the whole series, and it reminded me of like Roald Dahl stories. Like they really sort of hold the world in their hands, I think, for the show, and I really like that.
All right, guys, if you want to support this show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll cast a spell on you with our comedic stylings.
Oh, that's fun.
Sure. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Find us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live. Eat as many apples as possible.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more. And we'll see you at Pete's Dark Baptism.
What?